Well, good morning. Right now, it is the last day of March, 31st on a Wednesday, and it's a kind of cool morning. And I have a very special guest with me this morning. Dr. Mark Huntsman is a currently sitting member of the City Council and has been for many years. And I'm just basically going to turn it over to Dr. Huntsman and let him just kind of tell you a little bit of background. We're going to go through the background, the years of service on the City Council, and talk about the ordinance that we just amended. And it's basically his personal philosophy. And then he has a very special pet project he's been working on for several years. I definitely want to hear about that. So thank you for coming this morning. I know you got a busy schedule today, but I appreciate you coming. So how's everything going? Good?
Fine. Happy to be here, Mayor. Appreciate you inviting me to talk a little bit about Scottsville.
So tell us a little bit about, of course, your background, going to UK, going to dental school and those kind of things. I'm just kind of interested to hear about that.
I was born in Scottsville, about a block from here, at the old Graves Infirmary, and grew up on West Main Street and practiced dentistry on West Main Street. So I haven't gone very far in 73 years, Mayor.
Yeah, stayed on the block, basically, haven't you?
Stayed on the block, exactly right.
That's cool.
Well, I graduated from Scottsville High in 1965, and then attended UK for 7 years, I guess, undergraduate school, and got my bachelor's degree in case I ever wanted to do anything like teach. And
what was your undergrad in?
Science, primarily medical type sciences. Uh-huh. And then 4 years of dental school. And graduated there in 72, and then spent 72 through 74 with the U.S. Coast Guard in Wilmington, North Carolina. And then my plan was to come back here and practice dentistry with my dad, which I did. Came back in 1974.
So you were in the Coast Guard?
Yes.
Now, were you a dentist in the Coast Guard?
Yes.
How was that?
I loved it. I got to live at the beach, it was just like your own private little practice. It was not a big installation. Only had one dentist, and I was it.
So you were pretty popular.
So right out of school, thrown into a solo practice. Yeah. It was kind of an interesting.
Literally right out of
right out of dental school. Yeah, and probably made some mistakes that I didn't have to answer for just being there 2 years.
Well, now let me ask you. I'm curious, and I'm kind of being facetious here, but so when you were doing a drilling out or doing an extraction, did you do it on the water in the boat at all? I mean, kind of bumpy.
Well, that's interesting. I had the opportunity. My primary patient load was the crews of two Coast Guard cutters, mm-hmm. and they had a dental suite on the boat.
Oh yeah,
on the ship, but. And they invited me to go out once when they were out on patrol in the Atlantic in case there were any, dental emergencies.
Sure.
And I was married with a 2-year-old son, so I thought I better not be out on the Atlantic for two months.
So it was a 2-month stay.
Yeah. Oh,
well, and then it could have maybe, you never know, extended. You never know the situation. That's interesting, though.
Yeah.
So where did your dad go to dental school?
He went to U of L. That was always interesting because we had.
Sorry to hear that. Yeah,
Yeah, as a matter of fact, when I was interviewed at UK, you have three interviews before you're admitted, and the first question every interviewer in the dental school asked me was, "What does your dad, as a U of L graduate, think about you going to UK?" And that was 1969, so that's been a long time ago.
Well, did you apply at U of L?
I did,
and
I got accepted. Both places, but I'd been in Lexington 3 years already, and I liked it.
It's a great town.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I still like to get back to Lexington.
We've talked about this, going through the UK campus. I mean, I graduated there a few years ago myself. but it's every time you go, they're building something new. Of course, the W.T. Young Library is amazing. But I got tickled because, of course, I lived in Hagen Hall, and it's demolished. It's nothing now. But my daughter had a chance to go to tennis camp there 2 or 3 years ago, and she stayed in the replacement. I'm like, it was a suite. Their own microwave and refrigerator. I'm thinking, we were like Hagen Hall, any of them, we were just roughing it, basically.
My first year was at Hagen Hall, and I think I've told you this before, that I lived in the same little section as as two of the UK basketball players, two of the runts.
Mm-hmm.
Runts.
Oh, wow.
Pat Riley and Louis Dampier were roommates, and that was before the Joe B. Hall Lodge. And,
right.
And everybody lived, all the student
athletes. They were in the mainstream.
They were in the mainstream with us poor folks.
And now, what year was that?
That was 65, 66.
Okay.
That was the year that the runts went to the finals with lost to then Texas Western.
Because I was thinking right after that, Larry Stamper went down from my hometown, Beattyville, and played for Rupp. Matter of fact, he was a junior on Rupp's last team before Joe Hall took over. But now, Louis Dampier and, that Pat Riley, that's big time. Now, did you keep – I would keep up with Pat Riley just to get great heat tickets whatever.
I can tell you a lot about – a lot of Pat Riley stories. Pat and Louis, we called Pat the Chief. That was his nickname. And he and Louis Dampier were roommates. And
that's amazing.
No two guys could be any more different. Riley was this connected in New York fashion dresser, and Louis was from a small town near Indianapolis, and they just didn't seem like they fit.
Midwest meets the East Coast, or something like that.
But they were fun guys to get to know.
I bet And the thing is, and then Riley went on to be about the best sixth man on the Celtics. I mean, he was involved in Red Auerbach's team,
and still, is a wheel with Miami.
So. Oh yeah, he's had a great coaching career. And, just general manager and different things. He's got a real instinct, I think, for basketball players, of course. But anyway, that's a great story, though. So how many years have you served on the council?
I was elected first time in the fall of November of 1977. Mm-hmm. So took office in 78. And
now, was your dad on the council at all?
He served 12 years.
I think, he did? Okay.
He decided to quit. And not run again after I came back to Scottsville. And so I was sort of recruited to run in his place. And I thought, I've been back in Scottsville. At that time, I've been back in Scottsville 3 years. What do I know about city government? More or less, I guess, rode my dad's coattails, as you'd say.
The
council, I said, I don't know anything about city government.
Well, the thing about it is, Mark, maybe that seat was for a dental candidate, and maybe you were the only one to met the requirement for that. But that's a great thing that you. I mean, to grow up here and to follow in your dad's footsteps, which is, I think, is an honor and very flattering, especially in the same profession.
Yeah.
You know, there's always the dream of parents wanting their siblings, kids to follow, and dental school, medical school, all those are not easy pathways to take.
No, and I even met with my dad and tried to talk him into running again, so I wouldn't have to.
Right.
But his philosophy was always, the community supports you, you need to give back.
Sure.
And the community supported me very well all the years that I practiced here. And so it was something I really wanted to do.
I think it's great that you did that.
Back in the back of my mind, but it was just a little scary starting out with
without
much background.
Yeah, you're still trying to learn the dental part, all that, the local bits. So did you all practice together for a while?
Yeah, we practiced together till he retired, and that was about 14 years, I think, we practiced together before he retired.
And you all were still speaking on the weekends and at night? Okay.
Yeah. We practiced dentistry during the week and played golf with each other on the weekend.
There you go. So let's talk a little bit about kind of coming forward to what we're doing now presently. You know, we've got a lot of things on the board. You know, we feel like that we're moving forward, with our Highway 231 sewer project. And we've got some potential development out there going to probably – take place in the next few years. But first thing we did is the other night we proposed an amendment to the ordinance about the meeting times. And, I think that, it's important that we be as accessible and transparent as we can. And when I brought up the idea about two meetings a month, you had already maybe expressed an interest, and I really appreciate that proactive approach.
Well, we had years ago, I don't remember how many years ago it was now, but because of part of it was just the long meetings that we used to have, trying to cover a lot of business, that I just brought it up. I don't remember if I brought it up in a council meeting, but I talked to some of the council members about possibly moving to two meetings a month. And I just kind of got poo-pooed on that pretty quickly because everybody said, well, gosh, one meeting a month's long enough. And plenty, we get the business done, but I just thought it would possibly smooth things out a little bit. That way allow more time for input from citizens if we had a meeting that we got the regular business out of the way.
Sure.
And then have that opportunity to hear from folks. You know, I learned early on that, sometimes you, after a long meeting of regular business, you just kind of want to get done because you've worked all day and you want to go home, you got to work the next day. But I've always thought that you really need to make sure you see both sides of a situation when there are two sides.
Sure.
And most times there are.
Absolutely.
And that was one of the things my dad always said was, he wanted to hear both sides of everything and have a little time to mull it over and not make snap decisions until you hear. And sometimes you'll hear things outside the meeting from somebody that they didn't really want to talk about. They're a little bit bashful about opening up in a public meeting. So I just thought that was a good idea. But at the time, apparently the council.
Right.
And I don't even remember who was on the council or even who was mayor. I've had to. Opportunity to serve now under five different mayors.
are you the longest serving council member?
As far as I know, somebody told me that.
I didn't ask you if you're the oldest. Are you the longest serving?
Well, I'm getting close on both.
Okay. Well, and here was my thought on that, and I'm concurring with what you're saying is that, you know, the business meeting is more of a routine.
Sure.
But the thing is, you know, there's quite a bit there, and when you get to the end of it, it's almost like you're drained as far as. You're trying to get through this, and there may be some discussion in the business part of it, but you're right, you know, and usually it takes, 35, 40 minutes, maybe a little longer for routine business. But, and then, you know, a topic that we'd like to discuss that's important and we want to input, you know, people, you know, have to sit there for 40 minutes, you know, like school groups and so forth, different things. We have different guests coming in, and the way I see it is we're kind of delegating each meeting. The noon meeting will be more of a routine business type thing, and there I'm sure will be things come up. But I think that fourth Monday at 6 o'clock, it's a timely meeting. Folks can come if they want to, you know, after work. It's going to give us an opportunity to focus on and maybe just take one issue. I mean, like, for instance, we've got infiltration system problems with Baptist Hollow and those kind of things, and we're working through those with the state. But kind of dissect a particular subject topic and let people, if nothing else, educate them on what we're attempting to do and where we want to go.
Yeah, I think it's good. And again, you know, the way back in the back of my mind, I said, "Oh no, another meeting during the month."
Sure.
But really, our job here is to serve everybody, and sometimes you can't do it in the time that you need to take to do it. In just one meeting.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, a lot of times people may not come because, well, I don't want to, you know, the business part of it. But, you know, the thing about it is, though, we're going back to a regular session agenda, basically, the first meeting in April, the 12th. But, you know, I think it kind of tries to address those folks that, you know, maybe work third shift. You know, they can maybe, you know, they can do a night meeting, or if they're working, you know, second shift, they can maybe be able to do a 12 o'clock meeting. But the thing about it is, we're, you know, with media, Zoom, I mean, it's all going to be Zoom. Even when we go back to a regular meeting, that folks are going to have an opportunity to tune in on Zoom as the city council members too, though. So we're trying, you know, it's a broad, I think, spectrum of how we're trying to reach out to anyone that may not have access to physically being here in our meetings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
And I think they found that with, you know, the churches and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's so funny to hear them talk, you know, I can watch five different services. You know, we talked about that a little bit. My mom gets to watch her church back home. She gets to watch, you know, two or three services here. So the same principle applies, is that we're trying to reach out to as many people. Because we're public servants.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one thing that... that you got to keep, you know, in the forefront all the time. That we're not doing this just for ourselves. I've always thought that the folks that I've had an opportunity to serve with on the city council over the years, with very few exceptions, they've all had the basic tenet in the back of their mind. It's what's good for Scottsville.
It is.
And that's what we're trying to do. And you don't always have to agree with us. Sometimes the decisions we make are, you know, based on the best information and what we think long term. And that's one thing that I've tried to stress to the past at least two or three councils is that, well, even further back than that, that we need to be, as you mentioned earlier, proactive rather than reactive. And we need to be thinking 15 to 20 years ahead and not, you know, hand to mouth.
Exactly. And I think that, that we have instituted that from basically day one. And everything that we do, you know, is cost analyzed, sure. You know. And, of course, we have a roadmap of everything we want to do. We, you know, and there's a lot of things. And, you know, we've implemented several savings operations. And in turn, we're reinvesting those back into our infrastructure, our personnel, and our transportation. But, you know, I think that it's more of an educational thing in some way, like I just mentioned a while ago about it, you know, letting people see the process.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a legislative process. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, it's a sacrifice on a lot of the community members who serve on the council and so forth. But I think that that's the bottom line. You have to think about what's best for the city. And sitting in the city council or in the mayor's seat, it's a perspective of the whole picture. Mm-hmm. It's not anything really personal or individual. It's how it's going to affect everyone.
Yeah, and I've, you know, talking to people on the phone or in person so often, well, one of my pet peeves, I've said this many times, is uninformed complainers. And so often the people just see a decision that's been made and they don't know what went into the end of that decision. And it always pleases me when I get a call or somebody asks, tell me about how you came about this, rather sure. than just saying, I don't agree with that. You know, when they want to be educated about the decision you've
sure.
made.
Sure, they want to
really
be involved.
Pleases me. Yeah.
An informed constituency. You know, they're informed. And I think that that's one of my primary objectives. In implementing the two meetings and the social media and the podcast, I want to be able to, I don't know, hit all kinds of demographics so that when we do make a decision that everyone or most everyone has, you know, the knowledge. And then if they want to question it or, you know, talk about it, discuss it with in our open meeting, then they'll have some, you know, some tools and resources to talk with us about. And, you know, because, I mean, ultimately sometimes, and one of the worst thing I take to heart is when somebody says, well, I didn't know anything about that, or I hadn't heard that. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I'm trying to add as much outreach and so forth as I can to make sure that, you know, folks understand what we're doing here in the city.
Yeah.
So let's move along. Okay, well, let's talk about your pet project. I mean, this has been something, and I kind of want to know the background, because I understand that you have train sets, or you run train sets are that too, but what tell us about the restoration of the depot.
Well, you know, I knew when again, I'm trying to think ahead 15, 20 years, that someday I was going to retire, if I lived to retire. And
well, you can check that box.
yeah. That's one box check.
Yeah.
That I figured, well, I don't want to play golf every day when I retire, so I need something. Something to do. My wife and I have traveled some and loved that. Traveled overseas about 5 times, but I knew that I needed something, and I wanted it to be centered on Scottsville and Allen County. And you know, hardly a week goes by that somebody doesn't regret tearing down the hotel, or tearing down the old courthouse, or we're you know,
sure. And those
like
things you can't get back.
Yeah, you can't get back, and so. I thought, well, I had just kind of a casual interest in the railroad. I did have model trains when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And after my parents both passed away, I found my old electric train out in the garage. It's been sitting out in the garage for years outside.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, that'll never run. And so I just set up a little layout and put the train on it, and the son of a gun ran.
Did it rain? Was so, it the real heavy type train?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. It's the old American Flyer trains.
Wow.
So
that's an heirloom.
I set it up on a ping pong table in,
that's cool.
In the house, and then when we built the house we're in now, we just dedicated a room to trains. And,
that's awesome.
So, but the railroad depot had always been kind of the back of my mind, and It had been attempted, the Historical Society had attempted to purchase that property, oh gosh, years ago, and I don't know what the plan was to do with it, but I started developing a plan, thinking ahead, what that possibly could be used for. Mm-hmm. And so started investigating, and long story short, the owner at that time agreed to sell it, and so... with the generosity of the Largo Turner Charitable Foundation, we were able to purchase the property and started looking for grant money to restore it, including the two-story section that had been torn down. In the meantime, we found out just by accident that the last locomotive that served Scottsville was still around. And so I was asking some folks down in Tennessee at a museum down there, if they knew anything about that locomotive. And they said, yeah, we know where it is. And I said, well, can you tell me, where? And he says, it's right behind the building you're standing in. So I went and looked at it and found out that the owner, privately owned out in Texas, told him our story, what we were trying to do, and he agreed to let us move it to Scottsville and restore the exterior. So we're in the process of that right now. It's been... All of it's been very slow. I started this about 6 years ago, and so we got to the Transportation Alternative Program grant to restore the two-story part, and we're having a little trouble right now with the state government working from home and so on. That we've got the grant to do that first part, and our architect is to do this is a local former Scottsville.
Well, now what's down there now? What is that? Is that the...
That's the part that's still there is just a small office that they, after they tore the two-story part down and passenger service stopped in the 50s, they just built a small office for the freight agent. And so that little small office is on the west end, and the rest of the building is the freight section. It was built in 1886. That was before L&N didn't own the line. Louisville and Nashville Railroad didn't own the line until 1906. They bought it from the CNN, which is the Chesapeake and Nashville. They're the ones that built the depot in 1886, and then in 1906 it was sold to L&N, and they operated it until the line was abandoned in 1976.
I was going to ask you, when was the last train period?
The last time a locomotive left Scottsville, other than to come back and move stuff, was in January 1977.
Wow. So was it still a passenger?
No.
It was passenger, just freight
it was
just, only?
It was just freight, yeah. And so after that, the track was taken up, and the old turntable that they had to, of course, this was the end of the line, so the old steam locomotives had to be turned around to run forward direction.
Did they take that up too?
The foundation of the turntable is still there, or at least part of it, but the actual turning mechanism is gone.
So are you excited about where it's at right now and how it's going?
Well, it's just slow.
Right.
The community has really been a big help in helping us raise the money that's required for the match for this grant.
Absolutely.
But we've got enough money, excuse me, to get started on the construction if we can ever get, you got to deal with so many different folks here and in Frankfort and in Lexington. So it's just, it's been kind of aggravating and frustrating for me that we've had the money committed for 2 years, but we can't get the red tape.
Well, you know, even in a normal year, the red tape logistics is hard, but doing it, the way you're having to, remotely and all this kind of thing, I'd say is even more difficult.
Yeah, but there are funding opportunities out there, but you've got to do one step at a time. And you can't really ask for a whole lot more money until you use what you've already
been granted. Absolutely.
And
they look at that.
Yeah, and yeah. we're right in the, just kind of hung right now on the design phase with Shane Lyle, who's our architect and native of Scottsville. He's with GRW in Lexington. So we're trying to get the contract that we had to sign with the state approved so that we can move on to the design and the construction. And we've done some other smaller grants for other parts. We've got grants to restore the locomotive, and so we're hoping to get started on that in just a few weeks.
Are you going to get a caboose?
Well, we've got three that we were looking at.
Okay. I love the caboose.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's two in Tennessee that are available. But again, you got to raise the money to buy those.
Exactly.
Things. And you got to move them. It cost us $17,000 to move that locomotive.
That's unbelievable. I mean, everything in like that does cost money. And that's why you have to do step by step.
I learned very quickly that everything related to the railroad is heavy and expensive.
Expensive. There you go. But it is a great project that you've taken on to give back to the generations to come about the historical part. Because, you know, when you think of a railroad in Scottsville, I mean, no, there's never. Well, yeah, there has been. But now
a lot of people don't know that there ever was.
Sure.
And, you know, the purpose for this restoration will be a community use facility. It'll be restored as closely as we can to what it looked like when it was built in 1886. And the community will be able to rent it or use it for events. And it'll have a museum quality to it, we hope, and as well as room for folks to have receptions and club meetings. And
just another addition to, you know, our downtown, our quality of life, opportunities, you know. And I mean, it's just a part of the history that will be there on display, literally, right, on East Main
Street. And we're doing it basically through the Allen County Historical Society, but the city has partnered with us some, and I hope that the county will too, as well as private individuals.
Well, I think everybody can benefit from it. I mean, especially just knowing a part of the history and being able to visibly see it on display and be able to go through it and use the facility.
I've even found that some of the original signage on the depot still exists. And we've been promised that we'll get that back.
That's interesting. Well, okay. Well, I don't want to keep you. I know you have other things going on today. But I mean, just to wrap it up, I mean, I really appreciate you taking the time, and also, you know, kind of giving a little bit of insight on how you feel about how the legislative process works and the access for our citizens and our taxpayers and all those And I really do appreciate the support of all the council members on that amended ordinance, getting us two meetings a month.
And, well, you have to change with the times. And, you know, when I first started on the council, we had no money to do much with. A very unpopular thing that we had to do that we didn't want to do was the occupational tax. And so that's, you know, that has given us a continual source of revenue to do things with, in addition to the city taxes and grants and so on. So you just have to look ahead and think about where you want to be. And sometimes you have to take a detour. But,
sure,
you know, if you try to be fair, listen to both sides, and make sure the decisions you're making are ethical. I don't know what happens between local politics and national politics, but something goes haywire, and that really disturbs me. And you hear a lot of the bad stuff in national politics. And good things are happening behind the scenes, but that doesn't make the newspapers.
True,
those of us that have served in the time I've been here I feel like the decisions we made over. Gosh, that's 40-something years, have always been in what we think is the best interest in Scottsville.
And you brought up an excellent point, and we'll finish on this. And the thing about it, taxes, you know, raising water rates, those kind of different things, those are not easy things to do. But what my philosophy is and my objective and part of all this is to show those folks what we're doing with that money. I think that, you know, if we have to, you know, if there's any kind of tax increase or whatever has been in the past, I think if you explain what we're doing and showing how we're investing their money and we're not wasting it, I think, you know, it makes it more palatable. It does to me personally. I don't care necessarily to pay taxes and to pay the rates and so forth of utilities, because we are a utility company. But, it's nice to be able to see how that we're using that money to make this a better place to live for everyone.
Yeah, well, it's you got to look at it. I like to look at it like we're a board of directors for a company, and you have to be fiscally, not physically, but fiscally, responsible in what you do. And right. I mean, you can't. And that's one thing that that aggravates me sometimes, and other council members too. That, well, we hate to raise the water rates. We just did it 15 years ago.
Right. Yeah, 15 years. Yeah.
But you got we're doing a lot better, I think, at keeping up to date on what we need to do, so that if we do have to make customers take a lick, it's a smaller one.
Right.
And I mean, you look at everything. You know, prices are going up, rates going up, but. Again, we're citizens here too, so we have to.
Well, everything you all do affects you.
Oh yeah,
I mean, you know, so whatever actions you take are definitely going to directly affect you. So, but anyway, I wanted to wrap this up with that final thought that, you know, we are, as a council, would like, you know, we want to make sure that our, you know, citizens and our taxpayers and so forth, you know, can see what we're doing with them and feel like that they're welcome to ask those questions. Have explanations, because that's why it's what a public servant does.
And maybe I might not have the answer right away, but I like to follow up with folks after they've. In fact, I've got one I need to follow up with right now, as far as an explanation for a decision that we made.
I'm not afraid to say I don't know, but I'll get back with you.
Yeah.
And I think that's I would rather give them the correct answer. Just not a quick answer, you know, maybe not have enough information.
Exactly.
So, okay, well, listen, I appreciate you coming, and
you
have a good rest of the week, and I tell you to keep it in the fairway when you get better back to it. So have a good day.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Mayor.